to the Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. My name is James Tape Leg Graylian. Ready to hop over the boards is Tom Luongo from NHL Fan House. Well, the season began in Europe this past weekend, and we talked to Senators fan and hockey blogger Sherry from Scarlet Ice and the H-Log about how it feels to have an overseas season opener. Tom and I talk about the latest news, and Tom believes someone was missing from the games this weekend. He'll tell you who that was at the Rink. Well, it's week one of the NHL. The season started this past weekend in Europe, and a lot has gone on. We want to talk about Europe in a little bit, but first let's talk about what's happening in the NHL right now.
Well, it seems that after dropping two 2-1 decisions to the New York Rangers over the weekend in Prague, Barry Melrose, the new coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, liked his team's performance so much that he decided to ship off his only defenseman who can provide any kind of a physical presence, and shipping Shane O'Brien and right wing Michel Ouellette to the Vancouver Canucks for another soft defenseman by the name of Lukas Krajicek and a minor leaguer named Juraj Simak. Nothing interesting here other than the temper tantrum that Melrose threw after yesterday's 2-1 loss to the Rangers. Let's see, and I quote, "We're too easy to play against. Until that changes, we're going to have trouble." Well, then, Barry, why did you ship off the only guy who was actually willing to either drop the gloves or put someone's face into the glass? Doesn't seem like you're going to get any harder to play against now, does it?
It doesn't seem like much of a change so far since John Tortorella left. Well, maybe that's just me, but it sounds like a John Tortorella clone in a way, except now he's actually taking a little bit of action. Does it seem a little early to take action like this?
It seems like Melrose is going to run the Lightning the way he commented on hockey over at ESPN, I guess. I'm not really sure. Yeah, it seems really odd and a bit quick to me, without a doubt.
I don't know. Personally, I don't know why you would make a drastic move like this. And it just seemed like a drastic move to me this quickly, and certainly after not this early on and playing in Europe, which it seems to have its own little special set of circumstances anyways.
Right.
Are you going to actually take the first two games, back-to-back games, in another country, on another continent, and use those to base your feelings about your team and the entire season on?
I don't know. There must have been something else going on with O'Brien. I'm not that's the only thing that makes any sense, other than Barry Melrose is actually still thinks it's 1992 and he can, you know, just go and ask for new players whenever he wants. The interesting part about it is that I caught a bunch of the stuff over the weekend, and I caught about half a period of the Rangers and Tampa yesterday afternoon. And I got to tell you, both those teams looked like they were skating in mud compared to what I saw from the Senators and the Penguins. So, you know, Barry Melrose is going to be unhappy with the way his team is playing right now. I got news for you. You're not, until you improve your team speed, you're not improving at all. And I'm not sure where that's going to come from. It's certainly not going to come from changing out Shane O'Brien for Lukas Krajicek.
Well, we have our first suspension of the season. Ryan Holwig has been suspended for checking from behind.
Oh, what a shock.
You're not surprised at all.
Oh, no. Holwig, I'm surprised he actually waited until so late in the preseason to try and destroy somebody's career. That's his MO everywhere. That's has been his MO when he was at the Rangers, and it's going to be his MO now that he's with the Leafs. I am surprised, actually, that now that he's with the Leafs, he actually got suspended, as opposed to Darcy Tucker, who's been, you know, kneecapping people for 5 years and never seemed to, you know, get anything other than a slap on the wrist and a, you know, free beer. So I don't know.
And Mark Bell went on waivers.
Yeah, no one can go from front page headline news in his acquisition to the waiver wire faster than a guy who was traded for by the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It's not. It's already looking pretty silly for the Maple Leafs. Suspension, Mark Bell on waivers. They haven't been doing very well in the preseason either, have they?
No. And the Leafs are rightly finally going to go through that rebuilding that they need to go through. The question, of course, is whether or not anybody's going to let them do it for any length of time. But they have to, and they've had very average drafts over the past 4 or 5 seasons, and it's going to be hard for them to adjust to this. But you know, you have to rebuild by going out and getting top talent in the draft. It's the only way, regardless of you know how much money you have, regardless of the salary cap or anything else. I mean, Detroit keeps proving it year in and year out that if you draft well, you can attract top talent that's already established. I see the Hosa signing. And if not, well, you know, you just keep bringing kids up from Grand Rapids and you keep doing it. So you should, the Leafs, if they have been smart all this time, have been spending money on their scouting staff and their organizational infrastructure in order to produce high quality prospects to fill in with, they wouldn't be in the situation right now. I have no sympathy for them.
Well, they seem to have the perfect setup for a minor league system. Their AHL affiliate is right there in town.
Yep.
It seems like there is absolutely no excuses for the Maple Leafs not to have a serious and solid minor league system.
I'm honestly almost speechless, and that says something for me, how bad the Toronto Maple Leafs are actually run. So we'll see how long it takes Cliff Fletcher to get run out of town on a rail. And according to what Greg Wyshynski was telling us last week, there's an even on bet that I guess that Brian Burke is going to want to take that job over in Toronto. We'll see what happens.
Well, the season started in Europe. It started over this past weekend. Four teams, four games total. It's an interesting thing to have the season start in Europe. But for love it or hate it, there were points handed out.
Right.
To me, myself, I don't really agree with starting the season in Europe. I'm not a huge fan of it myself. I know that looking at this past weekend for myself, not having a center ice package certainly hurt quite a bit. To me, opening day started basically day two, and it started at about 11 o'clock, 11:30 my time. That's just silliness to me. If you can't, I think that it's wonderful for the people who got to see the games, but considering this is a gate revenue league that we're talking about here, why aren't you treating your fans to an official opening?
Well, you can look at it that way, and I think that's those are all perfectly valid points, I think. But the other side of it is that if you want to showcase the NHL overseas, and I think, and personally, I think we should do that with the amount of players in the league of a European background, to not connect the league itself with the people who helped produce these great players, I think is a terribly missed opportunity. And to just go over there and play exhibition games, for example, I don't think does the NHL any good. It doesn't. You don't showcase the game that we have if the games don't really matter. I mean, they did their exhibition games in various places around Europe, which I thought was also very cool. But I think it's important that if you're going to do it, you commit to it all the way, and you know, you hand out some points. And you know, it makes it means that for four teams, they have to spend a couple extra days early. You know, get a training camp a couple extra days early. But you know, the benefits at the end of this are enormous. It's that opportunity, and it sounds cliched and everything else, but I really do think that, you know, the next Jagr or the next Alfredsson or the next Sundin or Boris Salming or Jari Kurri or whoever it is, I think he'll be sitting up in the stands, and they get that opportunity to watch their favorite players live and in person and potentially interact with them at that level in an NHL setting, I think is important.
Some people think that this is the precursor to expansion into Europe, which I don't really see as being viable, and certainly not viable in an 82-game schedule.
I don't see a European expansion in any way to be viable. I really don't. I don't see how you can get that done. It's already an expensive league to run. It's already an expensive league to administer. The travel costs are already astronomical as it is, and then you're going to add in potential moving games back and forth between the European teams and the American. I don't see it logistically. I don't see it. I don't see it playing well, the having games starting at 12 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday, for example, right? Because the Rangers and Tampa played at 12 o'clock our time yesterday and on Saturday. You know, if we have an actual division over in Europe, Berlin's going to play Prague, and it's going to happen at 12 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, our time. We're not going to see those games. And I don't know about you, but there's nothing worse than watching sports tape delayed. It's just not worth it. It's the one
thing. You already know the score. What's the intrigue?
Right. I mean, unless I'm doing, you know, research, or, you know, unless I'm getting prepped for a blog post or something along those lines where I need to say something intelligent, which, you know, that in and of itself is already, you know, on thin ice. But I have to say something intelligent about the thing. I'm going to go back and I'm going to go watch a tape of the game. But under no other circumstances do I have any interest in watching an old hockey game, really, unless it's one I didn't see originally and it's, you know, 20 years old and it's on the NHL network. I certainly don't want to watch yesterday's games after I know
the way I see it. The way I look at it is that until Major League Baseball expands into Japan, where Major League Baseball is huge,
right
there, the NHL doesn't have a shot in hell of making Europe work. If they can't make most people say if they can't make the South work, then they shouldn't try and make Europe work.
Well, I mean, I think they've made the South half work, and I think that's a that's a matter of just – that's a market-by-market thing, as Greg said last week, and I think that's a fair assessment of the situation. But Europe, yeah. Unless they wanted to go with an organized minor league, kind of like NFL Europe did, tried to do, that would be fine, you know, in order to promote – in order to seed the drafted prospects and even the North American players over in Europe and seed them there – as an organized, you know, adjunct to the AHL, for example. I think that could work. That may have some promise. I'm just vamping off the top of my head now. But as an actual professional division in the NHL, that I just can't see.
Do you think that starting the season in Europe is worth the trade-off of cutting out your audience in North America from the season opener?
No, because it just means that you can have two season openers with that same team. And that's even better. It's almost like you can have your cake and eat it too, because, you know, they're going to still have their home opener, for example, in Ottawa. They're going to do it. It's just not the official quote unquote home opener for the season, but they're still going to have their big, you know, whatever they're going to do to start the season off for the fans. I don't think they really lose anything in that respect.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to wait and see how the players feel about how they did over there. And we're going to find out shortly from Sherry from Scarlet Ice.
Yeah.
Find out what she thinks about her team starting off the season in Europe. Well, first off, before we get to that, it's time for Tom's 2 minutes of hate. And Tom, you have a unique and interesting perspective on who should have been in Europe.
The Rangers and the Lightning kicked off the latest season of the NHL in the capital of the Czech Republic, Prague, on October 4th. 1 month ago in Russia, the new Continental Hockey League began with 5 games on September 2nd. The next night, Jaromir Jagr took the ice for Avangard Omsk, recording an assist in his debut. And to date, he has amassed points at roughly the same clip as he did in his many years in the NHL, approximately 1.2 per game. Now, does anybody else see the irony of the NHL opening the regular season in a city where one of the most famous uprisings against Soviet hegemony in Eastern Europe took place, with the team of one of that country's most successful athletes but without the athlete himself? I certainly do. When Jagr signed in Omsk, I thought very little of it, thinking it a fitting end to a turbulent period of his career. It's no secret that I'm not his biggest fan. But on Sunday, I caught a portion of the Rangers and the Lightning between chopping firewood for the winter and driving 4 hours back to my job, and it became obvious to me that there was something terribly wrong. Jagr wasn't there. And during that drive back to work, I realized, as well, that it's a damn shame he wasn't. The purpose of starting the season in Europe is to connect the people who produce these great athletes with the league that showcases their talents on a nightly basis. And Jagr's talents, for all of his perceived flaws, are nothing short of prodigious. Getting him to use those talents with any regularity in recent years was the challenge, but it seemed that Tom Rennie was capable of doing so when it most counted. playing in the dead puck era he left as the ninth best scorer in history, still healthy, still producing at nearly a point per game, and only 36 years old. As James Myrtle pointed out at the time of his signing with Omsk, he was just 3.5 to 4 seasons from passing Mark Messier and being second only to Gretzky on the all-time scoring list. While the Rangers rightly moved to their youth and handed the team to Chris Drury and Scott Gomez, I can't help but think that this current addition is missing something. You know, that guy you kind of have to tailor your entire game plan against. So while Drury and Gomez are good hockey players and at times even capable of greatness, Jágr, on the other hand, was capable of making greatness happen seemingly at will. One can argue, and I won't necessarily disagree, that with such talent comes the responsibility to lead with it. We expect it. They demand it. When Gretzky left, the game was passed to Jágr, and it seemed he rebelled under that pressure, under that spotlight. Gretzky accepted his fate as ambassador to the game. Jágr couldn't do so. Right or wrong, good or bad, it wasn't a role he could handle or wanted to handle, though I believe at first he tried. Similarly, now we have Sidney Crosby having accepted the weight of the NHL onto his shoulders and seems willing to carry it for the team where Jágr had his greatest success. Ain't irony truly grand? In the end, the NHL will move on, and so will we, such is the way of things. But I have to wonder, considering all of the mixed feelings that Jaromir Jágr engenders in people, when it comes time for him to hang up his skates for good, will anyone care enough to retire the sweater, which commemorates that famous uprising against irrationality and brutality, in a sense, making good on the promise to honor all the cultures that make up the hockey community, and to forgive him for only being one of the most creative, dominant, skilled, and successful hockey players to ever walk onto a rink. And nothing else. Ta.
Well, with the Senators being one of the four teams starting the season off in Europe, we wanted to talk to a Senators blogger, and we were lucky enough to get Sherry from Scarlet Ice to come on with us and find out what she thought about her favorite team starting the season overseas. The season started, and yes, it started overseas. Mm-hmm. And it started with essentially the Senators having a home game that isn't at home.
No, exactly.
What do you think of that? How does it feel to have two games down, one of them being a home game and it not even being at home?
It doesn't feel like it's actually been at home because it wasn't. You know, there's not a lot of the same kind of spectacle and celebration that goes around it for it to being actually a home opener. So I don't know. It kind of does feel like it was a preseason game rather than an actual game, but I think when they go back home, they'll still have kind of the same celebrations or the same kind of excitement that goes with an actual home opener. So I don't know. That's kind of my take on it.
It may have felt like a preseason game to you. I can tell you that I saw the game on Saturday, and the game had a really good pace. Probably the best pace I'd seen so far in preseason or anything else. It really looked like those two teams were going at it pretty good, and they were jazzed to play in front of that particular crowd, which was mm-hmm. I thought was good to see.
Yeah, the actual hockey was pretty good, although on Saturday I think both teams looked like they were still a little bit rusty. There were a lot of mistakes being made, but the game on Sunday was really good. I thought that it was definitely had a regular season NHL feel to it.
Yeah, I missed yesterday's game. I was on my way back to my other half of my life and missed the entire thing, unfortunately.
Mm. Now, do you last season the Ducks did the overseas thing, and essentially as soon as they came home, fell apart. Now, oddly enough, Brian Burke not too long ago actually admitted that, hey, that was his mistake. He had scheduling issues after that he shouldn't have made. But do you have any concerns about the Senators coming back from being overseas and having any issues, you know, jet lag or whatnot, essentially restarting the season a second time?
I do have some concerns, especially seeing how the Ducks kind of reacted to it last season. They do have a week off before their next game on Saturday against Detroit. So there is that time kind of to readjust everything. But I am a little bit concerned about it just because it's a long flight. There's jet lag. There's still a lot of issues that the team need to address still, I feel. So I am concerned about it. But I do feel like it was a good thing for the game to go overseas, especially to Sweden. And, you know, there was that connection to Daniel Alfredsson, and it was good for the fans. So I think you have to balance these things out, especially if the NHL is aggressive about pursuing European expansion.
Do you think that they are?
I don't know. I think Paul Kelly and Gary Bettman both kind of had addressed it while they were over there, and they kind of had two different takes on it. I think Gary Bettman was a lot more tentative about it. I think Kelly was actually like, this was something that they might be interested in. So,
well, I think at the very least, going over there is a very good thing for the entire community. It's important, I think, for, you know, I mean, the Europeans make up what, 35% or 40% of the league now, or is it that high? And that's it's really important to see that happen on their ice over in that part of the world, because otherwise it's nothing but the World Championships, the Olympics, which the NHL is not committed to anymore or anything like that. I noticed you had some. You said your team has a couple of issues outstanding. Would one of them be Craig Hartsburg as coach, or is it Mike Fisher's outstanding injury? If you want to speak to a couple of those things, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. I liked what Craig Hartsburg did on Sunday, and I think the team has been really buying into a system. I'm not too familiar with Hartsburg's coaching system, only from what I've seen internationally, but it's a whole entire different take when you're dealing with younger kids, because he has a lot of junior experience and he has NHL experience, although none of them were quite successful. Right. I'd rather just see how it goes. One thing I didn't really like about it was the fact that he did keep the big line together, when I feel like maybe it would have been a better idea to split up Alfredsson away from Spezza and Heatley. But it seemed to work, and that was that's usually a line you go to when things are really bad and there's no scoring at all. But if it works, it works, I guess. As for Fisher, I am really concerned, just because he's had injuries before in the preseason, and it's something, I guess, that speaks to his conditioning, that it happens so much. And, you know, he's 28 years old, and he's a fan favorite, so a lot of people cut him a lot of slack, and there's really no denying that he gives it his all, and he works really hard, and he's really important to the team. But I'm beginning to think that maybe we've seen all that we can expect from him. Like, maybe we've set the goals a little bit too lofty for him, and our expectations are a little bit too high for him. You know, they addressed it on Hockey Night in Canada that a lot of people expect him to be second line, and he's being paid like a second line, but realistically I think his skills are more suited to a third line role.
Right. Yeah. Well, I noticed that when I was doing my research for the Ottawa preview for Fan House, I actually checked in with you and a few other people, Black Aces and a few others, and you were all talking about the same thing, which is that Fisher would be better used in a checking line role, say centering, you know, the two Uber pests, than he would be trying to center Alfredsson, and that give Vermette and Kelly that option. I was just figuring that with Fisher out right now, that jumbles the lines and has to keep Alfredsson with Spezza and Heatley, which that's what I saw on that's what I thought on Saturday when I watched it. One other thing to note, I was thinking about this the other day. Look at the Senators currently, and I'm not going to be mean or anything, but then look at what Hartsburg and Murray had built over in Anaheim when the last time they were together. Mm-hmm. It was a one line team.
Yeah.
with three checking lines and four defensemen, and solid gold, and at the time, solid goaltending.
Right, which is not exactly something Ottawa has right now. And I don't think you're being mean at all. I think that's a very accurate assessment, frankly. But, you know, I think is the rules that the players have right now seems to be working for them. But the concern will always be, if Alfredsson, Spezza, and Heatley get shut down, where is the scoring going to come from? And that is something that you want to see Antoine Vermette step up to. You want to see Dean McCammond and Sean Donovan try to contribute more offensively. I think Vermette has the reputation of being really a responsible forward and being good on the PK and things like that. But I think he's shown he has the capability of stepping up, and I think that's something he wants. Like, it's been addressed before that he wants a bigger offensive role. So I don't know if you saw the breakaway goal he had on Sunday, but, you know, that just goes to show his speed and his hands are really something that, you know, go speak to his offensive skills. So hopefully we'll be able to see him more in that role.
Sherry, I'm a Buffalo fan. I've seen Vermette's hands enough times. I have no doubt that that he could step up and give you 20-25 goals with the right set of wingers. I don't see that as being even half an issue. I would almost be interested to see Foligno move to the wing, or if he's or if he is on the wing, with him and Kelly or something along those lines, and trying to find a real second line scoring gig, or even, you know, Vermette with Alfredson and Foligno, and see what that comes up with. I think that's a better option than just sticking with the big line. Those guys spend enough time on the ice together now that they're killing penalties and playing the power play. They don't really need to be playing together 5-on-5, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think during the preseason and a lot of training camp, it was Jesse Winchester on the wing with Heatley and Spezza, which I think worked well. Jesse Winchester is a prospect that he's signed out of Colgate. And he showed to be a really smart hockey player. I think he showed a lot of poise. He made a lot of good plays. He played on a line with, I think, on the third line. So he was split up from Heatley and Spezza. But I guess that was just because they wanted to give the top line more minutes. They wanted to kind of limit everybody else just a little bit, just to see, you know, because it's the regular season, just to play it a little bit more safe. I don't know down the line if Hartsburg wants to keep the top three together. I feel like it would be better off if they did split the scoring, unless they can somehow find a way to bring somebody else in, or if Fisher comes back and can manage to step up to that second line role. But I wouldn't be holding my breath on it.
I would also note, I noticed on Saturday that he was getting Michel Therrien was getting the Malkin line out against the fourth line, even though he didn't have a last change. It's going to be very interesting to see if that happens regularly this season. This is something that, because he had the matchup on Saturday that he wanted the top line out against Malkin, and then he had Vermette and Kelly out against Crosby. And then, but I noticed that when Therrien noticed that that Malkin started going, he was double shifting him and getting him out and changing on the fly as often as possible to get him away from the big line. And it seemed to work on multiple occasions. And he didn't have last change. So this is something that, small observation for me early in the season, this is something that I'd be looking at to see if he's getting out coached.
Yeah, and on Sunday he was actually double shifting Malkin and Crosby again, and he did have last change on Sunday. So I don't know if that was just something that Therrien felt like he had to do, just because, right, you know, he was playing Crosby all over the place because they couldn't find wingers for him.
Right. Well, they went out and got Miro Chetan. It's not like they found anybody for him in the offseason either.
And with all due respect to Chetan, he's not a replacement for Hossa.
He's not a replacement for anybody at this point in time.
Exactly.
So, Sherry, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the top line, about the cash line, as they, I know they used to be called. Are they still called the cash line at this point?
I think so. I don't think we found a better name for them.
I think it's a pretty good name. They eat up a lot of cash, and, you know, it's Captain Alfredson, Spezza, and Healy. So I'm curious about Jason Spezza, because it seems like he gets almost a bum rap in a way. He always seems like the person that gets picked on by Senators fans, by the media, and I've always kind of thought that he has a pretty big upside. What's the deal with that?
Well, the thing is, you expect skilled players to make defensive mistakes sometimes. With their kind of creativity and imagination, you do expect it. The thing is, the Ottawa fans, I think, have seen those mistakes come back to bite them too many times. And the fact is, we've seen it for a lot of years. You know, he's, you know, somebody who's been in the league for a couple of years now, and you would ideally like him to kind of be more well-rounded, to be a smarter player. But, you know, when those mistakes come back, it's just a reminder of the fact that, you know, he still has a lot to work on. And the fact is, he has a very high salary right now. The thing with Spezza is, though, he's actually kind of polarizing even to Ottawa fans. Like, I've been talking to some Ottawa bloggers even today, and we've kind of been having a discussion about whether or not we are being a little bit too hard on him. I think he's just somebody who's easy to pick on, just because he is, you know, there are a lot of high expectations for him, and he has a very high profile role on the team, being the first line center. He is somebody who has been in the spotlight for a very long time, and you have high expectations for him. So, which is why when you see him make those little chintzy mistakes, you do feel a little bit disappointed. And, you know, he's kind of got that personality that it's easy to pick on, you know. He's got a bum rap a little bit because he's, you know, the giggly, giddy type, where it's just like you wonder if he's taking it seriously enough. So, but no, I think people need to cut him some slack, but I think we're, as fans, we are right in having expectations of him that he needs to get better. For the team to get better, he needs to kind of be a part of that. So
I've also been hearing a lot about the kind of the reemergence in a way of Danny Heatley, and how people are already seeing how much he's stepping up to the plate. This weekend, of course, had a big part to play with that, but also kind of his personality seems to be coming out a little bit as a little bit more of a leader and an active member of the team, chirping a little bit on the bench and banging the body around a little bit. What are you seeing from him?
Well, he did say in the offseason he wanted to play more of a leadership role, and I think he definitely demonstrated that by signing a longer-term contract. He has an A on his uniform now, and I think it was well-earned. He's not only doing what you expect of him, which is, you know, getting goals, but in the game on Sunday, he played a role on the penalty kill. He's becoming a much more well-rounded player. Just, he's not afraid to be, the coaches aren't afraid to use him in multiple roles. And, you know, he blocked a shot on Sunday, and everybody was just so wowed by that and thought that it was a good demonstration of, you know, if he's not just somebody who says he wants to step up, he actually does demonstrate it. And for everybody else on the team, I think that's very important to see, that a superstar player like him is contributing to the team and helping the team and in more ways than what is expected of him.
Well, at that salary level, and really at the age that he's at now, actually he and Spets are both, you have to step up in terms of that responsibility. It's expected with all high-end players at a certain point in time, if you want to be if you want to be that player that everybody looks up to, then you have to do everything possible to win a game. It's something that Thomas Vanek's going to go through for the next couple of years in Buffalo. It's the transition that Jerome McGinley had to go through out in Calgary. Everybody goes through it. And it'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure if my personal take is I don't think Spets is smart enough to take that. He just doesn't come across as very smart to me. Every time I listen to him, I watch an interview with him, I'm like, okay, you're just not all that bright, are you? Okay. And that's just it. Okay. Healy, on the other hand.
Okay, that's the other reason why he gets a bad rap, you know, the way he comes across on interviews. That's not, that's a reputation that he does have, that he doesn't come across as the brightest bulb. I don't know if it's well-earned or deserved, but there you go.
I don't either. That's what it looks like. And Healy, if he's taking a more physical role, tell him to stop, tell him to do so without the stick and without the slew foot and just actually take the body. He's got a big enough frame. He can just bang bodies as opposed to slew footing people, which I can't stand.
Yeah, one thing I do notice about Heatley is that he's not very good with controlling his stick sometimes. So,
not at all.
Mm-mm. And I think because he is close to Spezza, seeing Heatley maybe taking that role and stepping up will probably be a good influence on Spezza, or at least I hope.
Well, let's talk about goaltenders a little bit, if we can. Gerber started the weekend off and lost the game. Alex Auld pitched a 59 second shutout, basically.
Yeah.
I know what the talk on the American broadcast, on the Versus broadcast, was, is that they're already wanting to talk about goaltender controversy and whether or not, you know, is there already starting a goaltender controversy, which to me almost always seems like we're just doing this because this is what we do. We're the media. We love goaltender controversies. Looking at it that way, did Martin Gerber paint his mask and lose something along the way?
Well, it just wouldn't be Ottawa without a goaltending controversy, I guess. But Gerber, I feel like, just to me, is not consistent enough to be reliable. I think Hartsburg wanted to avoid a goaltending controversy by saying beforehand that he was going to split the games between the two guys. Gerber is just, when he let in the first goal on the first shot, everybody was like, oh no, here we go. Because he's just very fragile. And if he loses the game, you can tell he loses the game. But to his credit, he didn't seem to let that deflate him. And he did play he played to the best that you could expect from him for the rest of the game. But I think Alex Auld deserves another look just because he managed to make some really good saves. And one thing I did notice about him was that he made some really tough saves, while Gerber, for the most part, didn't really have that difficult of a time on Saturday. So I don't know if Gerber lost anything. I think we just see more of the same from him. So this is where Alex Auld definitely has the opportunity to come in and be like, I'm going to challenge for a spot. Because when he did come in, it was kind of generally acknowledge that it would be in a backup role.
Well, so we're already looking at kind of the repeat of a year and a half ago at the very start of the season, or are we just not giving this enough of a chance yet?
Well, I think it's different because a year and a half ago at the start of the season, it was Emery and Gerber, and it was I think people were – they wanted the battle because they weren't quite too sure what Emery was capable of, but they knew they kind of had a better idea of what Gerber was about. Unfortunately, neither of them lived up to the expectations we were hoping. But, you know, I think the fact that there, it's still a big question mark, so I think we kind of need to step back and wait and see for a while and just let the battle play out. You know, I think that our patience is running out with Martin Gerber. So if he doesn't make a wave really soon, then I think we really could be looking at Alex Al taking over permanently.
Well, that does it this week for The Rink. Our thanks to Sherry at Scarlet Ice. You can find her site at scarletice.blogspot.com. She also blogs at The H-Log, which you can find at hlog.blogspot.com. You can find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com. Tom's work is found at nhl.fanhouse.com. And just to throw more web addresses at you, my blog is at jerseysandhockeylove.com. You can always email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com. Or if you have something that you want to say, you can always call us. The number is 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465 if you just want to say something mean to Tom, nice to me, or about anything at all. Thanks for listening.